Good morning. In the week since the international gathering of prosecutors to work on sex trafficking has happened, the founder of an organization to help trafficked girls in Hawaii has had a lot to process. Nurse practitioner Jessica Munoz joins us with some of the realities they face. Meanwhile, on Maui, almost 270 acres of former plantation land will become organic farms and a nature preserve, at least according to a plan. Access to a surf break is also part of it. We'll talk to Maui Councilman Don Guzman with details for the next steps. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Storyteller Jeff Geer ventures beyond words with a new art show. He uses found images to create otherworldly collages. And the focus is on the Western Rider in the Maui Horse Show Association's upcoming event. We'll talk with show coordinator Melissa Brooks.
It's Monday, October 3rd. That's what's happening on The Conversation. Now news. Good morning and welcome to the first Monday in October. It's Monday the 3rd. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. This is The Conversation. And to my right, my partner in crime, Chris Vandercook. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Interesting story. This is looking after the welfare of those whom society has kind of discarded, yeah?
Some would say you could take out the word kind of.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that right now. Now, last week, prosecutors from around the world met in Honolulu with a single agenda item, how to network global trafficking cases to increase the chances of stopping trafficking in their jurisdictions. This past summer, Hawaii became the last state to ban sex trafficking. Still, those who help trafficked minors heal from their experiences say that these kids need better attention to make their young lives whole. Jessica Munoz is a nurse practitioner and the founder of the nonprofit Ho'ola Napua, an organization focused on the renewal of trafficked girls. And she joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
When we talk about trafficked kids, who are we really talking about? And what are their, you know, what's an average age?
So you're looking at an average age between 11, 12, 13 years old of entering into a situation of exploitation. And when we talk about this population of kids, we're not talking just about kids from overseas being brought to Hawaii or women being brought to Hawaii, but actually children, our local children right here in Hawaii being exploited.
By their own families.
Some by their own families. There's familial trafficking. There's trafficking by a pimp, which, you know, maybe a little bit more common for most people to understand. You also have kids who are on the run, kids who are runaways, who are extremely vulnerable to the ploys of traffickers. And so it's sad because the number of these children and these youths being exploited continues to increase. You know, given prior histories of abuse within the family or at home, being in foster care, but also kids who even go to good schools and come from families that are still together. With the internet and the age of social media, it has been crazy how many kids have been recruited offline.
So let's talk about some of those numbers. What are they?
So we're looking at in Hawaii, you know, it's difficult because we don't have the accurate, you know, the actual numbers of kids being trafficked. And part of that is because we haven't been collecting the data. So one of the things we work with the Hawaii Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And one of the things we've been working on is trying to get all agencies and social service providers adequately screening, identifying, recognizing, and reporting so that we have better numbers. But if you look at the number of children that are reported missing through the Missing Children's Center under the Attorney General's office, I mean, there's a significant number of children every month, between 1 to 200 kids that are reported missing. Now, of course, not all of those are trafficked. However, you know, the studies have shown that within 48 hours of being on the run, about 30% can be approached for sex services.
In Hawaii, the legal age of consent for sexual contact is 16 years old. That's the lowest age of consent, but it's the same as in 31 other states. Does that make it tougher to make the case for greater compassion and care for these trafficked girls?
Yes, I do. I think that it does make it difficult because these girls have been brainwashed and they have been told that, you know, this is what you were meant to do. This is what you are supposed to be doing. And so they think in a way that this was a choice. They don't realize they've been force fraud. There's been force fraud and coercion for getting her into a situation of exploitation. So what she deems as I'm doing this for my boyfriend or my pimp is actually, you know, a situation of exploitation. And so the age of consent, you know, comes into play because she can say, well, I consented to have sex with him.
I know. So you keep saying she, and granted, mm-hmm. we see a lot more with girls than with boys, but we shouldn't forget the boys either.
Absolutely. And studies across the country now are looking at the prevalence with boys. And I think it's, you know, if you look at boys reporting their history of sexual abuse in general is very low. And so, you know, I think we're just starting to skim the surface of what's happening amongst, you know, our male population around this issue. And yes, I never want to forget that this happens to boys as well.
You're in the medical profession. You're a nurse practitioner. Very often, in some way or other, one of these kids might wind up in front of someone who's a medical professional. How well networked are those who are in healthcare with understanding, first of all, that, you know, this is happening and these are, you know, our kids, and are they in fact networking with each other to understand that, you know, this is not just an area that may be child abuse in one way, or that may be, you know, something else, but that this could all be pointing toward trafficking?
Yeah, we've been working very hard to bring awareness to the medical community. I would say, in general, we have a long way to go. There still is not adequate screening going on in our emergency rooms across the state. There isn't a cohesive response from the medical side. It just points for the need for not just medical, but also social work, especially in the hospital setting, to be aware, because these kids and these young women are coming into our emergency rooms, into seeing obstetricians, because they do have babies and they're not being recognized as victims of trafficking or exploitation. But also, you know, they will be admitted to the hospital sometimes for various medical things. And if we're not asking the right questions and piecing together the red flags, the signs and symptoms, we'll miss it. And it's definitely needed in increased education.
There are some people who believe that because we've had some increase in focus on this, including at last week's prosecutors gathering, that we have more services for these kids, or there's a place for them to go. But there really isn't a residential place for them to go, and a lot of what they receive is quite piecemeal. Is that not true?
It is. It's very true. And that's what makes our role in the community so difficult and yet so exciting, because that's what we're changing. We are bringing Hawaii's first residential treatment program specific to underage girls who've been trafficked. And we're working very hard at that, because you need both short-term and long-term placement. This bill and this ban is really helping us to define the services that are needed for this population of kids. And it's pointing to the need for more restorative services, for placement options, for interventions for trafficked youth, because we're sending these kids off island at this point if they do need to be placed into residential care. And that doesn't help with trying to reintegrate them back into the community, back into their family, if it's safe.
And confront the fact that it happened here.
Exactly. Exactly. And recognize that, okay, we have to address this and we owe it to our children.
So did the prosecutors' meeting last week help? Do you have any sense of what came out of that?
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because at least we're beginning the conversation, and it's happening right here on our soil, that there was a collective response on behalf of prosecutors and law enforcement from around the world. So I'm hopeful. And I love how Mr. Conashiro pointed out in his Star Advertiser that he hopes that this is sending a clear message that sex trafficking will not be tolerated in our state.
A lot of people hope he's right. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Jessica Munoz is the founder and president of Ho'olanapua, a Hawaii-based nonprofit whose mission is the renewal of trafficked girls. She practices emergency medicine full-time at a local hospital as a nurse practitioner, and during the past 6 years, she's provided training to hundreds of healthcare professionals and social services providers.
This is The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. It's 8:15, and coming up, a storyteller finds a new language for his narrative. But first, your quiz.
In today's backyard quiz, one of our favorite flora, a plant that's made its way into Hawaii's history. It was one of the original canoe plants brought to the islands by the first settlers. The nut that grows on these pale green trees has an amazing variety of uses as a medicine, a condiment, a dye, a fuel for lighting, and even as a material for a child's toy. One of its first applications was as a light, with nuts being used as a kind of candle, burning the oil at its center. When the nuts are charred, they produce ink for tattoos. Its oil can be used as a wood varnish. Fishermen would chew the nuts and spit them into the water to break the surface tension and to remove reflections from the surface, allowing them to look into the depths. They coated their nets with the nut oil to protect them from salt water, and because of the tree's versatility and its historical significance, it was named the State Tree of Hawaii. You've got lots of clues there. This morning, we're looking for its name. Call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer, and the first one to bring it to us gets the T-shirt.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, working to protect and manage Oahu's drinking water resources for life. Learn 7 ways to save water at boardofwatersupply.com.
Jeff Geer's long career as a storyteller has always been informed by his restless curiosity, but that curiosity has led him in nonverbal directions as well. He's an avid collector of found images who has created a new art show that uses photographs and design elements from magazines to create images their creators never thought of. His show is called Collage Massage, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, Jeff. That would be you.
Yeah.
Was that accurate about your restless curiosity?
Yeah, I liked hearing it. I don't know if I would
that
have said it
mean
that
it's
way.
Accurate.
Basically, it's all about imagery. Storytelling conveys images through words into the ears of the listener, and mm-hmm. we have a communion that way. But fundamentally, I've always been a visual artist. Without a studio and no place to do it. But so every 6 months or so, I'd grab the extra bedroom, spread out a bunch of pictures that I got out of magazines, and putter around and find these odd sort of surreal combinations of disjointed objects that, which in the right context, kind of make this numinous little puzzle visually, like, wow. You know when you hit it, when it goes ding.
Yeah.
Like behind your eyes, you're like, oh, whoa, whoa. Something I never imagined I'd ever see.
So that's when you know you've got something, right? Is that the sign that you look for?
One of the definitions of art is it's beyond definition. So when you hit that thing and go, what? I mean, I'm a storyteller, so I'm always looking at these pictures going, what? What is it? What is? Like the name of one of the collages in the exhibit at Mark's Garage is The Gray Man Has Trouble Seeing the World in Black and White.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, you know, a portrait of beauty. Deep scars leave deep wounds. These are titles that come up as I'm playing with these little images and puttering around and going like, oh, this is about suffering. Or this is about grief. Or this is about being a child. Or this is about the woman wants a baby.
So it's still a narrative is what it sounds like. You just, yeah. When you start out, you don't necessarily know what that narrative is.
That's the fun. It's a revelation to me, and I just grab some glue and fix it in space so that I can show it to people. Actually, I've never ever showed anybody except friends at dinner parties and stuff. And I just, when I had a space last like Christmas, I just took over a bedroom and just said, "Look, I'm going to do this." And these pictures just came tumbling. Like blah, 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 blah. Every night, I'd go up and show my wife two or three images. I'd look at this stuff. Till finally, it was like she said, "You know, you really ought to show this to people." I went to Mark's Garage. Rich Richards looked at it. I just said, "Put them out." And I said, "Look, you just tell me. I mean, should I just like never show this publicly ever? I do enough public stuff. I don't need a show."
Yeah.
But he said, "This is, you know, we really ought to. We'd be loved to have it here." So that's what we're doing. And we just put them up yesterday on the wall, and I've never seen 55 of my collages all spread out and looking elegant and black frames and white walls. I mean, I'm tickled pink. I can't wait to see what people think of them because they're so cockamamie.
It's not as if you didn't already have plenty to occupy you in terms of creative directions, right?
Well, life is short, boys and girls. Live it fully, and I'm just grabbing for as many things that hit the numinous and the luminous and make my life vital as I can. And making pictures instead of watching TV is one of my preoccupations.
It sounds as if this might be the kind of thing that could encourage others who have held back from their creative side to just give it a shot.
Oh, that would be a dream come true. Anything that provokes people to express their creativity is in my world, healthy.
Does it drive you crazy when people say things like, "I could never do what you do"? You know, and sound as if they've kind of stifled the creative impulse within themselves before they've even tried?
If the answer to that question has any weight at all to anyone listening on a radio, in a car, in their bedroom, in their kitchen, go ahead and find out. Do something. Just sketch a pad of paper. Do something to loosen up. That's why I do these collages. They're like aerobics for the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's coming. Postcards from Wonderland. They just bubble up, and I'm like, wow. And what are they? I mean, it's a fascinating process to be surprised by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what creativity does.
But a lot of people, Jeff, hold themselves back from what you just described before they've really even, I mean, I hear this, "Oh, I don't have any talent. You're so good at that. That's for people like you, not for people like me." Do you hear that from people sometimes?
Well, of course. And I hold myself to that same standard. I'm always trying to do better, learn more. I mean, it's a growing process. It doesn't end. You don't reach a plateau and say, "Now I've arrived." Art is an ongoing creative process. You know, there's no end in sight.
But you keep going. Jeff. That's what I'm saying. You don't edit yourself. You just go out and
I'm thereby plagued in the eyes of many people because it has no, intrinsic value other than it fulfills my need to be alive. I don't make a lot of money from it. It doesn't have a market value that I can really wave at anybody. It's just fun for one thing, and it gives me vitality. So if that's something that concerns you, I'm sure you're already starting.
Well, I would think that fulfilling one's need to be alive would be pretty much a shared goal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm asking.
Yeah, well, I'm answering, I guess so. For some of us.
Yeah, yeah.
More than others.
No, but, you know, I think that anything that can encourage people who haven't sort of headed off in those directions is all to the good.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing good art is a good way to get inspired. That's, I guess, a good thing. I'm always looking for good art. I'm always looking for any art. I'm looking for what people do.
Well, because you've been a performing artist for decades, and here you are doing something that you've never done in public before.
Yeah.
some would hold back from that, Jeff.
Well, and I did too. I didn't think about an exhibit. That just came about as a result of people saying, you ought to show this to people. I mean, you know, what I do quietly in my room for my own amusement and enjoyment is now being on exhibit. But I didn't start that way.
Yeah.
I suppose people writing songs don't initially think that they're going to make a hit record. They're trying to write a song or express something from inside themselves. You know.
Well, it does sound as if, you know, having that pure intention, putting this work together without thinking, oh, someday I'll put this together in a gallery show, in a way that sort of cleans it up, in a sense. It makes it just your self-expression without any motive.
Yeah, yeah. And but, I mean, then you get finicky. Okay, so every time I go by a magazine, I'm sitting in the dental, office and stuff. I'm going through magazines, and I'm not going through them to look at, you know, who's dating who. I'm looking for images that I can rip out, put in my pocket, and take home to put on top of other images that I ripped off in other offices and make something original. And so then I get concerned about, well, the edge when I put it down, I want to put a black line around it so it doesn't I'm doing like Photoshop in real, you know, time and space so the edges don't show. Or how do I turn it just a quarter of a turn and maybe a little higher? And where does it really start to pop? I mean, these kind of compositional things that, you know, are so finicky and anal, but they really matter because the pictures are so sensual. You know, magazine photos are like lit well, they're shiny, they're pristine, so you can get really precious with them. And what I'm into, like, nah, let's do something that's like I've never seen. And so sometimes I do them and I think they're failures and I have a whole pile full of like, you know, not quites. And then every now and then I'll pull them out and then just like try and creatively destroy them. And I'll come up with stuff, you know, that I'm like, wow, you know, I never ever saw that. Or something drops and it drops on an, whoa. I mean, it's almost like the cockamamie, haphazard way that things fall together creates something beyond yourself. And isn't that a marvel? And to be – so it's kind of like being alive to miracles visually but also metaphorically in life.
Well, the miracles are going to be there whether you're alive to them or not, right?
Well, what's the sound of the tree falling in the forest? Does it have a sound if no one hears it? Is there a miracle if you don't see it?
Well, but you have to sort of keep yourself open to it, and I think
that's the point. That's the trick. That's the discipline. Keep the eye open.
Yeah.
That's the being alive bit.
Well, it's interesting what you said about your storytelling being really the creation of pictures.
Yeah.
Anyway, because that imposes the discipline of, okay, you'd like to draw these people a picture, but you can't. You just got yourself in a blank stage. So now what do you do?
I'm not quite sure I follow you, Chris.
No, I'm just saying that that's what the storyteller's art is, right? Creating images without a canvas.
Well, usually, though, there's a DNA strand that's been passed down by geniuses I'll never know the name of to you and your lips and your breath. That through your own manipulation of the breath and the language can go inside of that listener and they forget themselves. And so I'm guiding you down a structure of images which has been passed on by people from the past because it has some meaning. Mm-hmm. And it resonates with other living people who are here, and we share this image and this experience of once upon a time to happily ever after. And at the end of it, our heartbeat changes, our eyes dilate, we're a fuller, emotional, empathetic human being mm-hmm. because of the story. That's the miracle of a story, right? So, but it shares some of the same common language with visual art, which fascinates me. Fast and slow, large and small, dark and light, dramatic tension, climax, cockamamie, and then, all the weird whimsical stuff that gets in there, funny, horror. All that's mixed in.
Well, you can see that in these collages. I mean, it does fit. What I know of your personality.
I'll take that as a compliment, although others might not.
Probably just as well.
I'm a little, these are weird images, folks. If you want to preview what it is, I made a YouTube. I couldn't figure out how to share them with all my friends across, borders.
We're going to put that on our
Facebook please page. Do. And I urge everybody who's got in a little moment to look at these collages on the YouTube.
And make of them what you will.
And come down to Mark's Garage.
Jeff Gere's Collage Massage solo art exhibit opens tomorrow and runs until October 29th at the Arts at Mark's Garage in Honolulu's Chinatown. And you can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, striving to increase awareness and treatment of kidney diseases affecting 1 in 7 Hawaii residents. Learn more at kidneyhi.org.
An aide to Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell seems to be working his campaign for free. She's also received several government contracts. Is there a relationship between the two? Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair joins us now with what they found out. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So we're talking about Caldwell spokeswoman Glenna Wong. And
right, and the campaign spokeswoman, I should make clear, not the administration.
Right, campaign spokeswoman. And the fact that she's been working for the campaign apparently without getting paid, but what you uncovered is that there's also been a great deal of contracts awarded to her PR firm, which is just herself. She's a sole proprietor.
Right. So through a public records request, a reporter Nick Ruby was able to find out just how much Glenna Wong received, $52,000. This is city contracts, therefore it's taxpayer money, in 2014 and 2015. And sure enough, she is the spokesperson for the mayor's campaign, but the records, separate records, campaign spending records, don't show her actually getting paid. What they do show is that she has contributed at least $2,000 to the mayor's campaign. She also had an in-kind contribution. That's where you pay for food and services and beverages and the like, and then you get compensated, reimbursed by the campaign. That one was for about $2,100. So the question that's raised is, well, is this a quid pro quo? Are you getting money from the city and then in turn taking your money and giving some of it to the mayor, who, of course, is currently running the city?
Chad, isn't
that the question?
It also is an issue of the business funds being used versus the fact that she is a sole proprietor. So does she have distinction as an individual or as a business person?
That is a good question. Hawaii has banned government contractors from giving money directly to political candidates. However, you can give as an individual, and many of them do. In fact, what they'll do is they'll often identify the company they work with in those campaign contribution records. The Campaign Spending Commission is actually looking at making a new rule, and this new rule, should it become law, would make it illegal for a sole proprietor like Glenna Wong, a sole proprietor of a business, to then donate while working under government contract, therefore eliminating that pay-to-play perception, if you will.
So is there real illegality here, or is there the perception that maybe this isn't cricket?
It is legal, but what Colin Moore, UH professor of political science, told Nick was, boy, it sure does look funny because, you know what, this is not the first time we've seen suggestions, not even suggestions, flat out evidence of people giving money to campaigns and in return getting contracts. I'm thinking in particular of PRP, remember Pacific Resource Partnership back in 2012?
Remember that.
We did, and just to briefly summarize, spent a lot of money attacking Ben Cayetano, who, of course, was Kurt Caldwell's opponent for mayor. And, of course, PRP is actually an arm of the Carpenters Union, which, as we all know, benefits from construction projects, like, say, the rail project. So these are the kind of things that Colin Moore and others say. There's a perception out there that I think troubles the public that, boy, this is just the way things are done around here. And that's the question that Nick is raising in his article today.
And another good reason why perhaps that needs to get really changed so that we have rules that are very clear and that there is no perception. It's just simply what is. Thanks a whole lot.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
We'll talk to you in the morning. Chad Blair joins us every day with a reality check from Civil Beat.
Support for today's programming comes from the Smithsonian Institution, presenting What Role Will Hawaii Play in the Pacific Century? With Admiral Harry B. Harris, Jr. and Irene Hirano Inoue, this Friday at 6 p.m. at the East-West Center. Learn more at whatitmeanstobeamerican.org.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look at what's happening in the massive universe around our tiny planet. As usual, we turn to the expertise of Christopher Phillips. Hey, Christopher, aloha, welcome back. What do you have for us this week?
Hey, Dave, it's good to be back. So this week, stargazers, look out for the planets of Mars and Saturn in our evening skies, located towards the southwest shortly after sunset. Now, Mars and Saturn are very bright, and so they should be very easy to spot. Now, the moon this week will be waxing, meaning it will be getting brighter as the week goes on.
And we have two discoveries that actually relate to our solar system.
Yeah, it's been very busy in the solar system. We have two major discoveries that have completely altered the way we look at some of our familiar planetary neighbors. First was the discovery that Mercury, the closest major planet to the Sun, is tectonically active. It means that Mercury ranks alongside the Earth as the only two planets having shifting tectonic plates, the very same plates that cause earthquakes and volcanoes here on the Earth.
This sounds like a cumbersome sort of process to make a discovery on. What was the thing that moved this forward?
Well, NASA scientists used a Mercury messenger probe to get close enough to the surface whereby it could take incredibly detailed surface scans. These scans of the planet reveal that Mercury's surface is changing over time, just like our own planetary surface does.
Any implications on this, Chris?
Well, tectonic activity on the Earth is thought to play a critical role in the habitability of our planet. If the plates suddenly stopped moving, or never moved at all, it's entirely possible that the Earth would be dramatically different, perhaps not even able to support life.
And as for your second discovery this week?
The second discovery has me the most excited. It is the discovery of water jets erupting from the icy surface of Jupiter's moon Europa.
That sounds huge. How was the discovery made? And tell us more.
It is. The importance of this discovery cannot be overstated. The discovery was made by scientists using the Hubble Space Telescope. This is definitive proof that below the ice sheet of Europa, there is a vast quantity of liquid water, and it's flowing. This means the chances of finding life on Europa are through the roof.
A pair of very interesting discoveries. Christopher Phillips, thank you so much for the report.
You are welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. We'll catch you next week for Stargazer.
Support for Stargazer comes from Ferraro Choi, providing environmentally sustainable architecture, interior design, and research for projects throughout Hawaii and the Pacific. FerraroChoi.com.
HPR's sustaining members know their monthly gifts mean a steady, predictable income for the station, and they also know we couldn't live without them. Sustainers are a big part of the reason HPR can provide two program streams all day, every day. So please make your pledge of $10 a month or more to keep your public radio station strong by becoming an HPR sustainer. Call us at 955-8821 or set up or increase your monthly support at hawaiipublicradio.org. And thank you.
In today's backyard quiz, it's sometimes called the candle nut tree because the nuts that grow on it were used as candles by ancient Hawaiians. Its Latin name is Aluritis molucana, and it was brought to the islands by the first settlers, who no doubt prized it for its variety of uses. They made ink for tattoos from charred nuts, medicine and fuel from its oils, and fishing canoes from the bark of the tree. Sap from the tree had a variety of medicinal uses, as did its small white flowers. A medicine made from the nut was said to lower high blood pressure. Fishermen used its oil to receive their nets and spread the oil over the surface of the ocean, creating an oily film that made it easier to see fish below the surface. When Hawaii became a state in 1959, it was an obvious choice as the state tree. And, of course, we're talking about the kukui nut tree.
Kai Stewer knew that answer, Chris, and called us from Windward, and we'll receive the HPR T-shirt. Now, if you've got a quiz for us, you can send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, and you just might hear it on a future show.
Helping people.
It made me feel good.
Taking care of people.
It's just something that I wanted
to help.
Hi, everybody. This is Bob Wehrman. It's time for The Benevolent Mind, our quest to discover the spark that ignites giving. I spoke with Lisa Fowler, Director of Development at the Hawaiian Humane Society. This is a place that changes lives. She said,
here at the Hawaiian Humane Society, we change a lot of lives for both humans and animals alike. It's obvious how we change the lives of animals every day, and sometimes it's not as obvious how we change the lives of people. For a lot of people, having a pet in their life is their primary relationship. It keeps them from being lonely. There's people who really want to provide basic support. The idea that they're helping to feed or house or care for a homeless pet, you know, that touches somebody's soul. And those people want to give you $10 or $20 or whatever it is to make a difference in an animal's life. But you also have people who give you $1 million to really move the needle. People who really believe in social change and the value of compassion and humane treatment. The people who want to really make a difference in our community on a large scale. It actually really does change lives.
Our program is a production of Hawaii Public Radio and is sponsored by the Hawaii Community Foundation, believing for 100 years that philanthropy is all about you.
Prostate cancer screening has become a bit of a controversy lately, with concerns about too much testing leading to unnecessary procedures. Join Dr. Kathleen Kozak on The Body Show this afternoon with a panel of experts as they explore the latest recommendations for the diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer in men. That's today at 5 on The Body Show.
Aloha, I'm Marla Momi Music, owner and designer of Pacificology. You're tuned to HBR2, Hawaii Public Radio. Continue the conversation by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @HIConversation.
If such terms as equitation and dressage are familiar to you, chances are you're among the millions who love horses, love to ride, and cherish the art of horsemanship. That certainly describes the members of the Maui Horse Show Association, whose Western Horse Show is coming up this Saturday in Makawao. Melissa Brooks is the show manager. She's on the line with us now. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
The first thing that comes to mind, Melissa, when I think about a horse show in upcountry Maui is, what a perfect setting.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's part of what draws you, but what drew you into that world?
Actually, my mom really loved horses, and so from a very young age, I always had a pony or a horse. So, you know, it's just always been a part of life for me. And for many of the other women on the board, they, you know, everyone comes from various backgrounds and experience. But, you know, we kind of have a little different atmosphere up here since it's not quite as competitive as it is in the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
There you have, you know, it's really a lot more competitive and more stressful here. We're a little more laid back and kind of geared towards learning opportunities centered around proper horsemanship, better communication with our animals. People, a lot of times, that is the number one reason they have issues with their horses. The horse doesn't understand them, and they don't understand how to give a clear communication. So we like to incorporate that into our clinic.
Sure.
So that we have an opportunity. We have access to some really top-notch judges that come, and, you know, who doesn't want to have a working vacation in Maui with horses, right?
Right, right.
So they come and they do, typically we will have a clinic just before or just after our show, and while the judge is here, we try and take full advantage of their, you know, experience, and they not only teach the clinic with us, but then we also get to go into the arena and practice what we just learned.
Well, Melissa, I would think that communication with one's horse would be a very kind of a personal thing. Can somebody teach you how to do it better coming in from the outside?
Absolutely, yes. Because it's a language. I mean, horses have their own language and energy, and a lot of it is super sensitive, and they do feed off of your energy. So we really work more towards that. It's a more gentle training in which we, a lot of people call it like the join-up method, and it's all about communication. Communication is essential. We work from the ground, teaching them, you know, to move away from pressure, and instead of, you know, getting harsh and demanding, we try to openly communicate, and it does make a better relationship, make for a better relationship with the animal.
Has that changed over the years, Melissa, the way horses are trained, the way they're disciplined?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Of course, you know, you've seen all the old Western where they just break them.
Yeah.
And that's just a dominant submission. You're not teaching the animal. You're forcing him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we really try to go more, you know, towards a gentle approach. And it pays off.
It seems as if recent decades have shown that to be more effective anyway.
Absolutely.
Your upcoming show is about Western riding.
Yes, right? we try and offer approximately 4 to 6 shows a year. We try and get 200 jumper and 2 Western. So this is one of our Western. And then we also work very closely with the Hawaii State Dressage Society. They also have shows here upcountry, which have not only the traditional dressage, but also Western dressage, which has become extremely popular in the past recent years.
For those of us unfamiliar with the term, what is dressage, Melissa?
It really goes back to the old days of the Spanish riding school. Most people relate to it by watching the Olympics. If you've ever watched and seen where they kind of look like they make the horse dance,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times to music even, that is where dressage came from. It goes all the way back to the originated from the Spanish writing school, and then it's been developed. And you know, like I said, most people are most familiar with it from seeing the Olympics.
But it's, and then Western dressage is something else.
It's the same thing, but in a Western saddle rather than, it's very, very similar, other than, you know, you're riding Western.
Mm-hmm. What's different about, I know the saddle is different. What's different about riding Western?
Well, you know, Western, you have your horn. That's traditionally what you see roping, reining, a lot of your cowboy events,
uh-huh.
You know, anything like that. And then the dressage saddle is more, it's similar to a jumping saddle, but it's designed a little differently. It's really to make the legs stretch down longer. When you jump, you kind of have to bring your knees up a little, stirrups come up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in dressage, you're stretching your legs down long. So the skirt of the saddle itself tends to go down longer.
There's a lot of lore to all this, isn't there, Melissa?
Yes. Yes, and most of us have been, you know, like I said, we're all from various backgrounds and experiences, and most any of us have been in for any length of time have experienced, you know, one or the other. There's so many different things you can do with horses.
It really sounds that way.
The Western, you have, you know, driving where they pull the buggies. I mean, there's just tons of different things.
Well, Melissa, that's enough to keep you busy, isn't it?
Right.
Thanks very much for talking with us. Melissa Brooks is the show manager for the Maui Horse Show Association's Western Horse Show, Saturday at Pi'iholo Ranch in Makawao. Start time is 9 a.m., and you can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tory Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on Hawaii Public Radio.
Bethann, you know a little bit about dressage and all that horsey stuff, don't you?
I've been riding since I was 2. Both English and Western, but mostly Western in the latter years, and not a whole lot over here, unfortunately.
Yeah, which is too bad, because what better place to ride, huh?
Yes, I wish I could have a horse again. That would be a really lovely thing, maybe one day in future. Right now, it's too busy with all the other four-leggeds and two-leggeds in my life.
Yeah, well, not quite as large. But
but they take even more time.
That's right.
That's going to do it for us for this Monday. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to take a look at what's been happening in the week since the debate. Political junkie Ken Rudin will join us.
And Maui's dog lovers hold a canine rally and training session.
We'd like to hear from you, and you can get to us anytime you like. Here's our talkback line. It's 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you're on social, you can find us on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. We tweet at HI Conversation, or you can get to me at BKOZHPR or on Instagram.
And we archive all our shows, so if you missed any of this show or want to hear a past show, you can find them under Talk Shows for the Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Bethann Koslovich. We'll see you in the morning back here with more of the conversation.